Thank you. Good morning, everybody. I'm Eiichiro Kokubo, and today I'm talking about oligarchic growth of protoplanets and its application to explain the diversity of planetary systems. And the goal of today's talk is to understand the meaning of this figure. So here, I plot the structure of planetary systems against the mass of the initial protoplanetary disk. So these three types of planets here, terrestrial, Jovian, and Uranian. So this is gas giants also and ice giants. So there are some regions for each planetary systems where some type of planets can exist. And I'd like to quantitatively show how these regions depends on the initial disk mass and also the profile of the disk. Okay. So this is the outline of my talk. The part one is about the basic concepts of oligarchic growth. And here I will explain the two important concepts behind the oligarchic growth. And the first one is slowdown of runaway growth. And the second one is orbital repulsion of large bodies, which I call protoplanets. So these are formed by runaway growth. And at the end of the basic concept part, I will show you the application of oligarchic growth model to our solar system. And the second part, I'm going to apply the oligarchic growth model to generalize protoplanetary disks and discuss the possible planetary diversity of planetary systems. So what is oligarchic growth of protoplanets? There are two important characteristics. So the first one is we have multiple, well, similar-sized protoplanets growing in the orderly way. It's not in the runaway mode. So this is due to the slowdown of runaway growth. I will explain this later soon. And the second important point is orbital separations of protoplanets can be scaled by their Hill radius. So Hill radius is given like this. And this is due to orbital repulsion, which we call orbital repulsion of protoplanets. And from the numerical experiments and also some simple analytical argument, the typical separation of protoplanets or these large bodies embedded in small planetesimals is about 10 times Hill radius. And I will explain this also soon. So first one is slowdown of runaway growth. So this is the relative growth rate of protoplanet embedded in small planetesimals. And if this very relative, this is the relative velocity between the protoplanet and small planetesimals. If this is, well, this does not depend on the mass of this protoplanet. So the dependence is like this. And this positive dependence of relative growth rate on the mass leads to runaway growth, so-called runaway growth. But if the mass of protoplanets becomes enough larger, it's about 100 times larger than surrounding small bodies, situation changes. So in that case, so this protoplanet dominantly heats up the surrounding planetesimals. And in that case, the relative velocity gets proportional to the Hill radius of this protoplanet. And so this is proportional to m to the minus one, or one-third. And putting this into this relative growth rate, we have the relative growth rate is proportional to the negative value. So this leads to the ordinary growth. So we have longer growth time scale for larger mass. So this is the ordinary growth. So this is the slowdown of runaway growth. So because the big body can heat up surrounding planetesimals very effectively, right? And the second point is orbital repulsion. So this is the illustration of orbital repulsion. So seeing from the rotating frame, this is the radial direction. So when two protoplanets embedded in small swarm of planetesimals encounter, well, I assume initially they are nearly circular orbits, okay? And by the two-body scattering, the two-body scattering increase the orbital separation, which I write with B. So increase the orbital separation and also increase the eccentricity. So after the encounter point is here. So the impact parameter, orbital separation, expands. And this oscillation corresponds to the eccentricity. But after this impulse, well, not impulse, but it's impulse-like encounter, the dynamical friction from small bodies dump the eccentricities, keeping the same major axis of protoplanets. So that means, so this coupling effect of the protoplanet-protoplanet scattering and dynamical friction from planetesimals results in orbital repulsion. So keeping nearly circular orbits, but they just expand the orbital separation. And so this the strength of the scattering is also dependent of the Hill radius. So that this typical orbital separation can be scaled by the Hill radius. So this is orbital repulsion. And
sure,
also, yes.
A lot of bodies when you say the whole disk expands?
You mean, so
you don't only have two, but.
Yeah, you're right.
The other side pushing you back. Right?
Yes, but we have enough separation, it is stable.
Okay. You have separated
and still have plenty of room. Yes. Right. But I will show you if the separation is not large enough for many bodies, the eccentricities can be excited. Then some collisions, by the collisions, the number of large bodies decrease, then they have enough separations, okay? And based on the Weigel-Kikros model, so if once we have the planetesimal distributions, we can predict the final mass or isolation mass of protoplanets, and also the orbital separation of protoplanets, and also the growth time. So the Weigel-Kikros model is good at the ability to predict these important things. So the accretion process is like this. And so because we know, well, we can estimate the orbital separation, we can estimate the mass of protoplanets, assuming there are no, well, large migration of planetary material. So that is a big assumption here. And this is the application of Weigel-Kikros model to the present source, to the solar system. So here I plot the prediction of isolation mass of protoplanets against the same major axis. And these points indicate the mass of the planets in the solar system. So here, this is a terrestrial region. So it's about here. The mass of protoplanets, or the isolation mass predicted by Weigel-Kikros model, is about 0.1 Earth mass. And it's almost the same as Mercury and Mars, but smaller than Venus and Earth. So that means we need giant impact stage of protoplanets to form, to complete Venus and Earth. And for Jovian planet region, so about between 3 and 10, so here we have Jupiter and Saturn. The core mass is about 10 Earth mass. And of course, depending on the model of gas accretion, but maybe we can make Jovian planets with this about 10 Earth mass core. Well, say in 10 to the 7 years. But it depends, of course, on the model of gas accretion. And also outside the Jovian region, we have ice giants, Uranus and Neptune. And in this area, the mass of protoplanets, well, agree well with the mass of protoplanets. And also the separation, orbital separation for Uranus and Neptune is about 10. So it's almost the same as the characteristics of protoplanets formed by oligarchy cores. But here, the problem is the formation time scale. I will show you later, but for example, in this model, to complete Neptune, it takes about 100 billion. Not 10 billion years. So we have still problem, of course. And okay, so now I am going to generalize the oligarchy cores model, and I would like to apply the oligarchy cores model to any types of protoplanetary disks. But first, let's summarize the observation of protoplanetary disks, and this is the number distribution against mass of protoplanetary disks in the Taurus Ophiuchus star formation regions from Beckwith and Sargent. And so the standard model or minimum mass disk model is around here. The mass is around here. So we can see from this figure, the disk mass is from 10 to the minus 3 to 10 to the minus 1. So we have a variety of mass. And also the mass of this standard model assumed is very common. But there is variety. So it's about three orders of magnitude variety in disk mass. And disk profile. So unfortunately, we don't know exactly now, but we will see, I think, in the near future. So this is a summary of the protoplanetary disk observation. And here, for the generalization of oligarchy cores model, I use the power of disk model with solar composition, which is same as the so-called Hayashi model. And this is the distribution of solid material in a disk, so power of disk. And sigma 1 is the reference surface density at 1 AU. And this is proportional to the total disk mass. So I sometimes use call this as the disk mass. And here, so please look at this factor, F ice. So this is one inside the snow line or snow border. And this is 4.2, I said, outside the snow line. Oh, okay, I can change these values, but for the present talk, I said 4.2. So this factor shows the increase of solid material by ice condensation. And for the gas component, well, we have the same power law, and also I keep the dust to gas ratio constant, which is the same as the solar composition. So, and I set the snow line, or here I call snow border, 2.7 AU. Okay. Okay. Then inside this, so we have rocky lands and rocky plantations, and outside snow border, we have icy plantations. Okay, let's. I would like to rephrase the assumptions of oligarchic growth model here, okay? And so I assume the orbital separation of protoplanets planets is about 10 or 15. Okay, I can change. But fiducial figure is 10. And we assume the accretion proceeds in gas, okay? And also, I do not consider at present, the migration of planetary materials like planetesimals and the protoplanets, and no type 1 migration, no type 2 migration. So, because I would like to keep the problem very simple, and so this is the first step to try to explain the diversity of planetary systems. So, please forgive me to just consider the in situ formation of planets. And I also assume accretion efficiency is 100%. That means all the material finally go to planets. Well, that means we cannot make old cloud, but okay, later I can include this effect also. So this is the disk model. And for this disk model, we can estimate the isolation mass of final mass of protoplanets and growth time scale, and also the equilibrium eccentricity of planetesimals. So this is necessary to estimate the growth time scale. Here we have eccentricity. So this is the generalization of our oligarchic growth model for the power law protoplanetary disk model. And we have confirmed oligarchic growth takes place only in the minimum disk mass model. So we have to check whether these predictions agree well with some n-body calculations. And okay, I'm going to show you the results of n-body simulations for checking the generalization of oligarchic growth model. So this is the equation of motion. So the solar gravity and the mutual gravity and the velocity change by collision or accretion. And initial condition is like this. So we have a global disk here centered at the sun. And the number of particles is 5,000 to 10,000. And here, I vary the disk mass. So I use the three kinds of disk mass. This 10 corresponds to the minimum disk mass model. And I also use the 10 times smaller and larger disks. And also I change the disk profile. So 3 over 2, this is the minimum mass disk nebula profile. And also, I adopt a shallower profile and also steeper profile. And initially, planetesimals are distributed in the region, 0.5 AU to 1.5 AU. And I use GRAPE for the integration. And I assume the perfect accretion, so which means any collision leads to accretion. And also, to save the computational time, I use the artificially enhanced radius of particles. In this calculation, I use 6 times larger radii. Okay, and let's see the animation. But I'm sorry, I could not succeed in embedding the animation in this PDF file. So please, and I lose pointer here. So please. Okay. It takes a bit. Okay. So this is then body calculation starting from 10,000 bodies. The disk profile is same as the minimum disk mass model, and also the disk mass is consistent with the minimum disk mass model. So this is the same major axis, and this is the eccentricity, and the size of size is proportional to the physical size. Pardon? It's about 10 to the 24. It's a bit large quantitations.
This is why the definition takes so long, because probably you also guess that if you don't have enough provision to the loss of disturbance,
mm-hmm.
you get
a
simplicity
of going
through the small
masses,
and
that's why the fission takes so long. Yeah. This. This by this calculation, I'd like to check, whether the isolation mass is consistent with the prediction.
But also, Ichiro, the time scale up there is of course off by a factor of
that. Probably six. So yeah. Right.
Because of the larger body.
Yes. So because the dynamical time scale is smaller for inner part, and also much mass we have in the mass. In a region, so the accretion proceeds fast in a part, and well, accretion proceeds slowly in the outer part. And you can see protoplanets like dancing,
Are these confined to the plane?
No, this is three dimensional. So I will show you the evolution in same major axis inclination plane also. Okay, this is the result of n-body calculation. This is without gas track.
Yeah. Have you looked at the gravitational enhancement factors and what the approximate values are under various circumstances?
I forgot the number, but I checked.
For that 10 billion years of Uranus, you have to have a very small FG. That's a fairly Safronov number of around unity,
just
what Victor was getting.
Right. Yes. Okay, let's go back to the view graph. Okay, so this is the same figure. So this is time evolution. And here, so these large bodies I call protoplanets. It's larger than 100 times the initial mass. And for those guys, I put this line. The length is about 5 Hill radius. And here, in this calculation, the mean orbital separation is about 13 Hill radius. So this chill means scaled by Hill radius. And this is on the same major axis eccentricity plane, and this is the same major axis inclination plane. So we have small inclination and small eccentricities for protoplanets. That is because the radial separation of protoplanets is about 10, and the instability time scale, for example, calculated by John Chambers et al., is larger. Much larger than this time scale of accretion. So that means we can keep the eccentricity of protoplanets small without small planetesimals for some time scale. And here I plot the evolution of surface density of solid components against time, and you can see some bumpy structures, but without these bumpy structures, this is due to the accretion into some big bodies. But without bumpy structures, the surface density is almost the same in this time scale. in the time scale of accretion. So that it means the initial profile is kept. Disk profile is kept. And then this is because the diffusion time scale of a planetesimal disk due to the self-gravity, only self-gravity, it's much larger than the gross time scale here. So that means on the accretion stage, this surface density profile hardly changes. Okay, I skip this. And here, I plot this, the mass of protoplanets. Oh, this is time evolution of mass of protoplanets against same major axis. And also, these two curves are estimated by using the oligarchy growth model. And solid line, I assumed the separation is about 10 Hill radius, and dotted curve, it's about 15 Hill radius. So these lines mean the protoplanet reached the isolation mass. And these curves mean so accretion is still on the way. So this this front of isolation mass goes outwards. So because the propagation, because the accretion, you know, proceeds faster in the inner region. So this is so the accretion wave, I said, propagates outward. And this propagation, time scale of propagation, coincides well with between the n-body calculations and also the model, oligarchy growth model. And here, so far, I showed you the results of the minimum disk mass model. But from now on, so to confirm that the validity of generalization of oligarchy growth model, I'm going to change the disk mass and also disk profile. And here, I changed the disk mass. So this is we have already seen. So corresponding the disk mass, minimum disk mass model. So this is 10 times larger disk mass, and this is smaller disk mass. And here I also put the average separation of protoplanets, orbital separation of protoplanets, scaled by Hill radius. So,
excuse me.
Yes.
The time scale is about 100,000, 400,000. Is what you get in the simulation, or it's already scaled?
Not scaled. It's raw values. Yes. I'm sorry. And for larger disk mass, we have large protoplanets, so the size is proportional to the physical size. So large protoplanets, but small in number. Small in number, not many. So, but for small disk mass, we have many small bodies, small protoplanets. And you can see clearly with this plot. Here I plot the mass of protoplanets against same major axis. So this is sigma, 10 times larger disk mass case, and this is standard, and this is smaller case. And here, the solid line is the prediction, assuming 10 Hill radius separation and dotted 15. So it's almost, you know, the n-body calculation, the result of n-body calculations coincide with this, the prediction between 10 and 15. So this is a small number, just 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. But for here, we have many, many protoplanets. And here we have larger protoplanets. But this is because in this part, giant impact stage already onset. And we have larger protoplanets here. But the important thing, what I'd like to say with this figure is the isolation mass is scaled like this. So this is the prediction of the oligarchy growth model. So the model agrees well with the n-body calculation. And next, so I changed the disk profile. So this is the standard disk mass case, and shallower and steeper case. And again, so these curves prediction by the oligarchic growth model, assuming that these separations, orbital separations. So outer part, because the accretion is still on the way, we have small mass polar planets. But please look at this area. So interesting thing is for alpha equals 5 over 2, so we have smaller polar planets in outer parts. That is on the contrary to the results of these shallower disk profiles. So this is saying the isolation mass is proportional to the same major axis like this. So the critical power index is alpha equals 2. And if the alpha is larger than 2, we have smaller polar planets outer part. Okay. But the minimum disk mass model is in this region, so we have larger polar planets outer part. So, and here I summarize the diversity of protoplanet systems predicted and also confirmed by N-body calculations. So we have the planetesimal disk like this. So this is proportional to disk mass, and this is the power index. So we have this mass, isolation mass, the separation, and number. Number is inversely proportional to the separation. So here I schematically illustrate this dependence. For example, there are four protoplanet systems here, and if the disk mass sigma 1 is larger, we have small number of protoplanets. So let's compare this part and this part. Okay, and so this is this disk mass dependence. So dn over this sigma 1 is negative. And here is the alpha dependence, the disk profile dependence. So for alpha larger than 2, we have smaller protoplanets in the outer part. And if alpha is less than 2, so which includes the case of the minimum disk mass model, we have larger mass for outer part. So that's the region, reason of we have Jupiter a bit far from the sun. Okay. And so next, let's think about the conditions for Jovian planet formation. And together with the oligarchic growth model, I would like to show you where we can have Jovian planets. So, of course, all of you know Jovian planets is formed by the gas accretion onto the solid core, the standard scenario says. So the lifetime of gas disk is from the observation, it's about 10 to the 6 to 7. But some authors claim it's okay to say 8. So, and I like this, variant, and I use this from now. Okay, and for the scaling, okay. And the contraction time scale of gas, it depends on, of course, the model, but in all the model, this time scale strongly depends on the mass of the core. So, for example, Ikoma et al. Presented the formula like this. So, and I use this. And so we can, gas giants, or Jovian planets can form only the circumstances where the growth time of the core is shorter than the disk lifetime, of course. And also, the contraction time is also smaller, must be smaller than the disk lifetime. So that means only for limited disk range, we can make Jovian planets. And okay, so, and here I plot the isolation mass for the profile 3/2, and so this is the standard disk model, so which I showed you before in the application to the solar system, and so once we know the isolation mass, we can calculate the time scales of the growth time and also the contraction time scale. So these are necessary to derive the region for where Jovian planets can form. So this is the growth time scale for different disk mass. So standard and 10 times larger, 10 times smaller. And these are contraction time scales. So this jump over the snow border is, of course, due to the ice condensation and the increase of solid material. So that, but contraction time scale is like this, and the growth time scale is like this. So we can make protoplanets between these two lines, these areas, and I will show you this. Okay, I skip this. Okay, so this is what I call the habitat segregation map of planets. So here I plot the area for three kinds of planets against same major axis on the same major axis and initial disk mass plane. So for example, for the standard disk model, it's about 10. Single one is 10. And for the standard disk mass model, we have terrestrial planets from here to snow line. And if you know the disk lifetime is this big, we have the Jovian planets between snow line and about 10 AU, which is well, by chance, you know, agree with the present position of Saturn. And over this area, we have ice giants. So if we assume the disk lifetime is this big, so we can, well, the result is consistent with the present solar system. But if we have this lifetime, so this is the lifetime for 10 to the 7, right to 7 years. So, maybe I skip. Okay, sorry. I forgot to show you how to calculate these habitat segregation pattern. So from this condition, we can calculate the minimum semi-major axis for Jovian planets, and from this condition, we can derive the maximum semi-major axis for Jovian planets. And Jovian planets can exist between this area and terrestrial planets. It's without Jovian range and within the snow border. And Uranian planets, we have not Jovian range and over the snow border. So these are the habitat segregations. And so this figure was derived using that calculation. Okay. So and for the profile like this, so if the disk mass is three times less than the initial disk or the minimum disk mass model, we have only terrestrial and Uranian planets and many small. So we don't have Jovian planets for small initial disk mass. But if the disk is massive, say three times the minimum disk mass model, we can have several Jovian planets and also several Uranian planets. And maybe, so the present solar system. Okay, sorry. So, okay. Present solar system is, okay, sorry. So the orbital instability of these several Jovian planet system can explain the origin of eccentric planets or interaction with gas disk with this massive disk can explain hot Jupiters maybe. And for only the suitable disk mass we can make solar system like planetary systems. And okay, so we arrived at the figure. This is the goal. So this is the schematic illustration of the diversity of planetary systems. So I have already explained all the things. So we can have Jovian planets in this area. But this area becomes wide as the disk mass increases. And we have terrestrial planets here and Uranian planets here. Okay, that's good. Okay, and so future work. So in my talk, I just explained, I showed you the region, only the region, where we can have certain type of planets. But I didn't say anything about number. How many, for example, terrestrial planets or Jovian planets or Uranian planets in that region we can have. So which is the future work we have to consider. And also, so I, as I said, I neglected the migration of planetary materials in this model. But as you know, Ed has published a paper concerning about the migration of planetesimals. It can change. The migration can change this model, but I have not implemented the effect of migration, the model yet. So this is the future work. So the summary. So I explained the oligarchic growth of protoplanets. So that is from planetesimal disk to planet or protoplanet systems, and together with the conditions for Jovian planet formation. We can derive. So for the first time step, for the first step, so the basic framework, we can derive the diversity of planetary systems. So we can derive habitat segregation pattern, and also that this diversity, the dependence of this diversity on disk characteristics. That's all. Thank you.
I propose we go into the coffee hour a little bit because we have exhausted all of our time already. But we'll go till 10 till. Okay. Rayim.
So I'm a big fan of this oligarchic growth. It really helps understand the late stages of planet formation and reduces some of the uncertainties about the relation between the total mass in big bodies and their sizes. Mm-hmm. But I think on the details there is some confusion between velocity dispersion dominated and shear dominated disks. Mm-hmm. So if you go to your third slide, when you explained, can you go back to your third slide?
Which slide?
Third, number three. Very beginning. When you explained
the repulsion?
No, just the fact that it's orderly growth.
Okay, orderly growth.
Yeah, this one.
Yes.
Here what you're using is that 1 over MdMdt is proportional to V escape over V rel square. And this is correct only in the dispersion dominated regime.
Yes, you're right.
But yet the separation that you're using later on, saying that this is a few RH, is actually only valid in the shear-dominated regime. Mm-hmm. And there is a, here a mixture between the two that is done all over the literature, in my opinion. So I think there are two versions of oligarchy.
Mm-hmm.
One in the dispersion-dominated regime,
mm-hmm.
in which indeed the growth between different zones, and the zones are now defined by U over omega rather than a few RHs. Not 5 or 10 RHs, but U over omega. Uh-huh. This is in the dispersion-dominated regime. And then you have orderly growth between different regimes of that size,
mm-hmm.
and within each regime you actually have runaway,
mm-hmm.
because within each regime you have two big bodies that experience the same velocity dispersion of the small bodies,
mm-hmm.
so that becomes the standard runaway. So you have runaway accretion within a single zone, and orderly growth between different zones, mm-hmm. and the size of the zone is U over omega, not 10 RH.
I assumed the dispersion-dominated regime in this
here.
Model. Yes.
But in the next slide, you assume the shear-dominated regime when
you're saying the separation
is RH.
No. So you mean because between
10 RH, U over omega. It's nothing to do with RH, basically.
But
it depends on the velocity dispersion of the small bodies.
Well, but for the large embryo, large protoplanets, we cannot use the dispersion-dominated regime.
But you see, if there are two planets
yes.
separated by only a few times RH, 5 or 10 RH,
mm-hmm.
and the U over omega is much bigger than that, then these two bodies, they see the same velocity dispersion, and they will have runaway in between them. So even if they don't collide, only one of them will win
mm-hmm.
in the runaway race, and it will stay the only big body in the U over omega zone.
Well, but if the separation, you know, as I showed in my calculation, is about 10 times U radius, and which is almost the size of the feeding zone.
Yeah, but this is almost exactly U over omega. If you go to the simulations a few
mm-hmm.
slides down,
mm-hmm.
you'll see that the eccentricity that you have is 0.1, and the distance between these embryos is also 0.1.
Well, but this separation is not smaller than the feeding zone. So they are not in the same feeding zone.
No, I agree. There should be one body in each feeding zone, except that in the dispersion-dominated regime,
mm-hmm.
the feeding zone should be defined by U over omega,
mm-hmm.
not by a few times RH.
Yeah, U over omega is
if you're in
larger
the dispersion.
Than the, the separation. Yes, I agree with you.
Okay.
Yes.
So that's the way it proceeds in the dispersion-dominated regime.
Yes.
In the shear-dominated regime,
mm-hmm.
actually, there is no orderly growth. Because
mm-hmm.
if you rewrite your equation in the previous slide,
mm-hmm.
if you rewrite them for the dispersion-dominated, for the shear-dominated regime,
mm-hmm.
you'll get that 1 over m, the MDT, is actually independent of m. Because there is only one power of V escape over over the velocity dispersion that comes in that regime.
Yes, in the shear-dominated regime, the velocity is proportional to the Hill radius because the difference of the impact parameter, right?
Yeah, but then the next equation is incorrect. This one is only correct for the dispersion-dominated regime.
Okay, yeah, I see. Yeah.
So in the velocity, in the shear-dominated regime, you cannot use that equation.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, you don't have runaway. You don't have orderly growth between zones. You have neutral growth. If you have two embryos starting at some mass ratio, they will stay at that mass ratio. The way you still get oligarchy mm-hmm. is by a completely different mechanism,
mm-hmm.
is this simply that these big bodies have some chance to accrete each other
mm-hmm.
While they're also accreting the small bodies.
Yes.
So there are two different versions of oligarchy growth, which are completely different. One in the dispersion-dominated regime, one in the shear-dominated regime.
Yeah.
And here there is some mixture of these two, mm-hmm. in my opinion.
I'm not sure, but yes, I agree with you in the point. So this model is mainly what we intended to application for the dispersion-dominated region. But I'm not sure you were right or not. So we are mixture being some shear-dominated and dispersion-dominated region. But yeah, I have to check.
Sorry, it's coming. I mean, obviously, this is an oversimplified model because you ignored fragmentation due to collisions. Have you compared your scaling with the results of, like, Inaba and Wetherill, for example, who do include fragmentation, and does your scaling still hold up fairly well for those cases?
Yes, I compared my result with you and George, 93, mm-hmm. including fragmentation, but only for the big bodies. The result is coincide with your calculation, but of course we don't have smaller bodies like yours, so we cannot compare. But for the larger bodies, it was okay.
I've been working on these type scalings ever since the star formation program here in 1985, and I derived a similar scaling that you did, except I had a factor of 7 Hill sphere. I want to give the problem. It relies on yours. Yes, the point is that you get a disk and profiles that are, you have this dip around Jupiter,
uh-huh.
and the way I suggested solving that problem is you have a flatter disk profile
mm-hmm.
that became steeper on the outside mm-hmm. on the basis of simulations by Doug Lin and others of the viscous evolution uh-huh. of solar nebulas. And the actual scalings that go on in these don't depend on the exactly how your mergers occur.
Mm-hmm.
It's what happens early on. As long as you have these small velocities,
mm-hmm.
you're going to get growth that is very rapid and get to these runaway bodies.
Mm-hmm.
Problem is, when you look at some of the simulations by Stu Weidenschilling and others,
mm-hmm.
out at greater distances where these bodies are less bound to the solar system
mm-hmm.
and are occupying a very small fraction of their Hill spheres.
Yes.
He's not getting this. He's getting that there's a lot more scattering
yes.
going on.
Yeah.
And do you know what's going on there? Do you have a solution to that problem?
Well,
different
yes,
physics
I,
that
yeah.
apply that he would be wrong, incorrect
yes.
in that.
Well, I assume so perfect accretion, and also I assume the efficiency, accretion efficiency is 100%. And I know, which is not true for the outer part of the solar system, but for the first step, so please forgive me to use the efficiency 100. But I'm now going to revise the model, including the ejection rate, and I'd like to compare how the result changes. But I know you're right, yes.
I'm a big fan of this kind of back of the envelope calculation because it helps you understand the numerical simulations. I'm glad we have now introduced type 1 and type 2, all of Garcia growth. But let me just throw in a couple of things which won't change.
Well, Shigel will include yeah. type 2.
Yeah, it won't change the topology of your diagram, but uh-huh. it'll shift it. First of all, Goldreich and Ward and Sasolov and somebody else move the snow line into 1AU.
1AU.
By very simple reasoning, it's just shielding the disk from
mm-hmm.
With dust, which Hayashi, the old number is the black body temperature
yes.
where it reaches 150. And that probably is right that it moves into about 1AU.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is the work on photo evaporation. You
mm-hmm.
do
yeah.
tend to have a steeper profile as you get out beyond something,
yes.
somewhere between
yeah.
2 or 3AU and Saturn. So that should be included.
Yes.
Thank you.
You're right. Yes. Actually, my formula of generalized oligarchic growth model, so we can change the snow line.
Sure.
Yes. So you can see how the
We've exhausted our time, so come back at 11:10. Let's begin then.
Thank you.